Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Oncology Decoded. With me is my great co-host, Ben Garmazy. Must be a Friday since we are recording. We really, really appreciate all of your support and encouragement for Oncology Decoded, for Cancer Science Means Clarity. Today, we are going to discuss some of the abstracts that we are looking forward to that's coming up at the ESMO 2025 conference in a couple of weeks. Looking through all these abstracts, I'm quite excited. Ben, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm really excited about ESMO. I always love going to ESMO. It's a really fun conference. Before I jump into that, you know, this is for all of you listening, you know, on Spotify or Apple, go to the website. Me and Manoj have been doing this together now for so long that we're wearing the same clothes and we didn't anticipate that. So we're twins today. And as an identical twin and a father of twins, I get, you know, now I have a twin at my podcaster over here. So that's really exciting. And also for all of those who celebrate, you know, we'll see how long this takes to get up to edited. But today is happy Taylor Swift launch day for her new album as well. So I'm sure Manoj is going home to listen to that as soon as we're done here on this beautiful Friday afternoon.
I honestly had no idea that it was Taylor Swift's release day.
We've been listening to The Office, you know, all throughout Nashville to celebrate. But anyways, okay, let's talk about ESMO because that's what we're here to do. And I think today we're going to recap, you know, what we think is going to be the most exciting. And I guess the caveat here is we don't really know until we see the data, right? So, but we have some suspicions. There's some titles announced. There's some things that we've heard rumors about. Obviously, we can't release anything confidential that the two of us have heard through the nature of the clinical trials that we help run. But we're going to talk about what we're most excited. And then, of course, we'll regroup after ESMO and give you our ranking of the top abstracts that are practice changing for community oncologists today. I guess in 2 weeks. So with that, you know, you threw it to me. So we're going to start on kidney cancer. We're going to do kidney cancer. And there's two studies that I think kind of rose to the top. There's a lot of interesting things out there, but two rose to the top. The first one is a study called Rampart. Rampart is a large phase 3 clinical trial looking at adjuvant durvalumab, which is a PD-L1 inhibitor, plus minus tremelimumab in patients with clear cell kidney cancer. Now, what makes this interesting? Well, we're already using adjuvant pembrolizumab, but we've seen negative studies from 6 months with nivo-ipi, negative studies with nivo by itself, a negative perioperative study with nivo. We've had this kind of rumor that maybe PD-L1 inhibitors don't work as well as PD-1 inhibitors in kidney cancer. So this is just kind of more on the ledger on a couple of those things. If this is negative, it's just now we're overwhelmingly majority of perioperative studies are going to be negative outside of that one pembrolizumab study. If it's positive, then it further supports immunotherapy in the perioperative space. And of course, CTLA-4, we all think should have a role in this disease, but obviously perioperative nivo-ipi didn't quite make it across the finish line. I mean, what are your thoughts about that, Manoj? Do you think it's going to be positive, negative, practice changing?
So I think it may be practice changing in the sense that if we now see another study with negative results of where endpoints are PFS and overall survival, really begs the question of how much are we overtreating with pembrolizumab?
I agree. If that's the case, then we're really going to need to look at how do we better use the nomograms, which a lot of us aren't using in clinical practice, to better select those patients that really need that adjuvant therapy. So
I think we need important. To come up with a better nomogram.
Right, exactly. Stay tuned, 2026. So, and then the next one that kind of rises to the top is KeyMaker U03A, which is a very specific subgroup, but it's a subgroup of frontline patients with clear cell kidney cancer. It's a phase 1/2 study. We've already seen the secondary, the second line patients on a previous data cut. This is frontline. It's going to look at many different combinations, which basically is going to give us a preview of what we might expect with some of the ongoing phase 3 studies out there. So they're pembrolizumab-based combinations. We're going to see combinations of PD-1 with CTLA-4 with TKI. We're going to see combinations with a HIF inhibitor in the front line as well. And we're kind of going to get a sense of how might some of these phase 3 trials that are combining pembrolizumab with CTLA-4 and lenvatinib, or pembrolizumab, lenvatinib, belzutifan, how might those look and compare to the current standard of care, which are doublets, whether they're IO or IO-TKI doublets. I personally think we're going to see positive data in this space. The question is, will it be positive enough to move the needle into the general practice? Obviously, COSMIC-313 with cabozantinib, ipilimumab, and nivolumab technically was a positive study for PFS, but of course the toxicity didn't justify the incremental benefits there. So to me, I think this will be interesting. It's not necessarily going to change practice tomorrow, probably, but it's going to be a sign of what's to come in 2026.
Totally agree. I think it'll help give us a little bit more guidance on what to use when trying to use pembrolizumab. So I agree with that. Kind of shifting gears, Ben, bladder cancer. You know, bladder cancer seems to be exciting as well, but personally, I think there's one big abstract that I'm looking forward to, right? It's the perioperative EV plus pembrolizumab. And are we going to omit chemotherapy now in this space as well? So it's the EV-303 trial that's looking at pembrolizumab plus EV. And we saw this initial top line results, which showed that there was a significant improvement in survival, but we haven't seen the actual data yet. We saw this press release about a month and a half ago or so. So I expect that this is going to be a landscape change for us, but we'll have to see what the data actually shows. In which case, then chemotherapy is quote unquote dead in bladder cancer, right? So you wouldn't necessarily be using chemotherapy in the perioperative space, first line metastatic, and it may just be EVP that we're looking at. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it doesn't kill chemotherapy. It just moves it down the list, right? And there's still going to need to be salvage options for incurable patients. But I agree. I think this is going to be overwhelmingly positive. I think we're going to try to use it as soon as we can, even before necessarily, you know, the 3 months it'll take to get the FDA approval, because we're familiar with these drugs. And we have to think it's going to be carboplatin and gemcitabine in the neoadjuvant setting. So, of course, we do need to see the data. We need to break it down. We need to make sure patients are getting to surgery. What's going to get complex on this is looking into the neuropathy issues, right? Because this study includes not just neoadjuvant EV and Pembro. It includes an adjuvant component of the EV as well, in addition to the immunotherapy. So what's going to be important for all of the practicing GU medical oncologists out there to help the community is going to be, how much EV do we really need? I don't know how much data we'll get on this first cut, but I look forward to, you know, numerous publications to come. And then, of course, we'll see the cis-eligible probably next year. Right now, it's going to be just the cis-ineligible cohort. So at initial approval, if it is possible, be in the cis-ineligible patients, and then it'll kind of move forward. Though, of course, as we all know, platinum eligibility is somewhat subjective. So depending what that data looks like will be kind of how we start to adopt it in practice.
I have a suspicion that people are going to, before it was the struggle of how do we make people cis eligible. Now I feel like it's probably going to be more, how do we make them ineligible to give EVP perhaps? We've done that before when we've had the significant shortage in cisplatin anyway, during, you know, more of the pandemic time where people were getting EVP. And that's, as you just said, it's very much a somewhat of a judgment call, right? Unless you know clearly that EF is really poor or something like that. But a lot of it can be finessed, let's put it that way.
Well, we got to see what the data shows first. But I think we're both expecting a big, big result there. And then, you know, on that spectrum, right, EV is a Nectin-4 ADC with an MMAE payload. He says we're getting rid of chemotherapy. Well, technically, it's kind of like a chemotherapy. It's just targeted.
It's a designer chemotherapy. It's not chemotherapy in the traditional sense.
It's a fancy one. But DV and toripalimab, these are two different drugs that you may not be familiar with. Dasatinib, vedotin, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, is a HER2 ADC with an MMAE payload. Toripalimab is a PD-1 drug that is approved in different spaces. But you could, the combination of these two drugs in frontline HER2 urothelial carcinoma is being read out. You know, this is a mostly ex-US study. But what I'm looking to see is it Nectin-4 or is it MMAE that pairs so well with immunotherapy in a frontline space? This may not change our practice per se, but it may change the future of drug development as we start to think which combinations of drugs make the most sense to improve outcomes in patients in urothelial carcinoma and perhaps moving away outside of urothelial carcinoma into other solid tumors. So I'm excited for that. And then
let me ask you some prediction questions here, right? So breast cancer, we're always looking at the estrogen, the progesterone, and the HER2. And then we tailor our therapy based on that. Now you're talking about HER2-directed therapy in first-line bladder cancer patients using an MMAE or ADC, right? Versus using your Nectin-4 inhibitors. So assume that the data is going to be positive and it's going to be overwhelmingly positive. Are you now going to check for HER2 in all bladder cancer patients and say, if they're HER2 positive, I'm going to use the DV versus if they're not HER2 positive, then I'm going to use EVP?
Well, this is going to be one of those cross-trial comparisons that we're not allowed to do, right? But look, if response rates on EV Pembro are very high, right? 2/3 of patients respond. If this looks dramatically better, maybe. If it looks the same, probably not. And then I'm saving HER2 for a subsequent line study. But we got to see what they show. We'll have that conversation in a couple of weeks. But it is exciting. And then the question becomes, can you use DV after EV? Or do we need to use, you know, the FDA, currently FDA approved in HER2, right? So we'll learn more about that, I'm sure. This is just the start of a second HER2 ADC moving into this space. But it's very exciting just to kind of get another drug with hopefully a big splash from a response rate standpoint, which we saw early phase data in a neoadjuvant setting in 2025 that also looked very similar to EV, very high response rate. So I'm predicting we'll see that here. All right. But let's move into prostate. And prostate, I think, is going to, we just talked about a lot of exciting things, but prostate, I think, is gonna win ESMO in GU tumors. So, Manoj, what's the number one? What do you think?
PSMA addition.
Has to be PSMA addition. Tell us.
I mean, it was already announced by Novartis, right? So PSMA addition is using LU177 in conjunction with ADT plus ARPI in metastatic, newly diagnosed, hormone-sensitive prostate cancer patients. And so we already heard top line results that were positive from Novartis for RPS and OS trend. So this basically is shifting radioligand therapy earlier and earlier, right? So now you're moving them from end of the line from the VISION study to pre-chemotherapy, now to upfront therapy. So I think there's going to be a lot of questions around who's going to get this. How are patients going to get access to this? How much testing is going to be needed to be done? How are we going to manage long-term toxicity? There's just so many things that we're going to have to address when we start using LU177 up front for this.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. It's great for patients if the results are as good as we're anticipating. I am nervous about the long-term side effects. I do think the long-term side effects will be overlooked for a while, and maybe worse than, say, taxane in a triplet, given the clonal hematopoiesis changes that have been reported with this and long-term potential risk of cytopenias and other things, renal dysfunction. However, all that being said, if we're seeing improved OS and RPFS, those toxicities will be potentially worth it. And we just need to figure out how best to select these patients, because it's probably not going to be every man with metastatic prostate cancer. There could be a lot of them, depending on what the data shows. So we'll stay tuned on that. And I'm excited as well. I think the next one, though, is if we're just going to be staying in the metastatic hormone-sensitive space, Capitello 218, P10-deficient patients, de novo metastatic disease, ADT, abiraterone, and capivasertib versus ADT and abiraterone alone. Now, capivasertib has some toxicities. We're going to get into that after ESMO when we see what this data cut shows. But it does have some very unique toxicities. It's not the easiest oral drug to handle in my personal experience. But this is targeted, right? Capivasertib targets that PI3K P10 pathway. And we know that P10 loss patients do worse. Now, we think the molecular variant signature in prostate cancer is 2 of 3, P10, RB1, and P53. So this is just looking at one of those three. Now, the question will be, if they're PSMA positive in the P10 loss, do you want to give Pluvicto? Do you want to give Capi? We're going to have to see what the data shows and figure all that out. But this is exciting that we're going to have another triplet potentially moving into the space with chemo, with maybe radioligand. Of course, we have to see what the data shows. Maybe this, and then also probably PARP inhibitors we're expecting to get approved in this space as well. So it's going to be a lot of options, and it's going to get more complicated, and it's going to get better for patients, though, because they're going to have better access upfront earlier on in the disease course.
Well, it's up to us to decode this for our colleagues in terms of how we would do it, right? Because based on amplitude, we're going to look at PARP inhibitors. We'll look at Capitello for maybe P10. And then we'll have to see what other biomarkers, quote unquote, that we can potentially use to help guide therapy to chemo versus any of these. But I agree with you. This is really fascinating.
And I'm hoping we can pull out subsets of P10 deficient patients in PSMA addition, in Arisens, in some of these other studies with triplets are to see how do they do on the forest plots, even though it's not powered to answer that question, to give a signal, are they doing as well as the rest of the population? If they're doing worse, maybe capivasertib really does shine here. If they're doing the same, as I said, it gets more complex. And you're right, we'll have to decode this in the months to follow. But, you know, on that spectrum of talking about lutetium, well, there's another study out there that I think is important. There's a phase two study from the Canadian group that's looking at lutetium versus docetaxel in the CRPC space. But we've always been talking about, well, what would have happened with PSMA4 if lutetium went up against docetaxel instead of just ARPI switch in that frontline mCRPC setting? Well, here's again, lutetium versus chemo. We can't fully extrapolate that to the hormone-sensitive setting, but we can see the relative side effects and efficacy in a CRPC population directly head-to-head in a randomized phase two from the Canadian group. So I'm really excited to see that. Honestly, I don't know what to predict. You know, I need to fly to Toronto and get some insider information or fly to Vancouver, but this is going to be exciting and it's going to be interesting. I don't think it's going to be practice changing, but I think it's relevant enough that we're really going to need to dive into this data set.
I think one of the key things we may learn from there is more quality of life data, and especially in this later line patient population. The challenge is going to be what we would have done if these are patients that received LU-177 earlier, and then now, you know, if we're talking about where we're going to go down the line, right? So like, what are we going to do from a sequencing standpoint? But this is good information in general, but I agree, I don't think it's going to be practice changing. One of the other things that's more, I think, practice informing is the ENZARAD study, right? So this is using enzalutamide plus ADT plus RT in the higher risk localized disease prostate cancer patients. This is very much right now we're using abiraterone in this population. So I don't think this is going to change anything, but I think it'll be another option that we could potentially use instead of abiraterone, perhaps enzalutamide as another option, as another treatment modality.
Yeah, no, I think this is great, right? We've looked at stopcap. We've talked about the difference between AR inhibitors and abiraterone, the unique side effects. Let's see what this data shows, but I think we'd be excited to have another guideline-directed therapy in this space to really, you know, let us know that what we think is correct for our patients is something that we can use. It's always good to have options. So excited for that. That's 8 studies. I think we're good for now. Let's not just do 10 because everyone does 10. Well, I think we can cut it at 8 for now, and then we'll see what we're really excited about after the conference, because maybe some of these fall off the list. Maybe some new ones come in. We'll each bring our own top lists and compare them. Do you have anything else you want to add about ESMO?
No, I am looking forward to seeing what's going to be on your list as well as mine. We should do it the same way we did it last time. We'll just show them on air.
Yeah, we're going to find a way to, you know, get the listeners out there to vote for whose list they like more one of these days. But we'll stay tuned on that. But anyways, you know, thanks everyone for listening. Again, go to the website. You know, we're wearing the same shirt. That may not happen again, or maybe it will. Who knows? We might coordinate if we get nice, good comments on our social media page or in our email. No, tell them where to find us.
Yeah, please follow us on X at Oncology Decoded. You can email us at podcast@oncologydecoded.com as well. We look forward to hearing your thoughts and look forward to joining you soon.
All right. And I'll learn how to say goodbye and thank you in German before the next podcast. So ESMO's in Berlin. All right. Take care, everyone.